WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Well, this is the big music awards week. The Grammys were last night. Tonight is the Rhythm and Blues Foundation Award Ceremony. Smokey Robinson will MC. The Lifetime Achievement Award will go to John Lee Hooker. One of the Pioneer Awards will go to guitarist Mickey Baker, who is being honored for his work on hundreds of recording sessions in the 50s and 60s as a sideman. Recordings by such performers as Laverne Baker, Ruth Brown, The Coasters, The Drifters, Screamin' Jay Hawkins, and Ivory Joe Hunter. Mickey Baker was also half of the duo Mickey and Sylvia, which had the 1957 hit Love is Strange. He's lived in France since the early 60s. Before we meet him, let's hear him with Ray Charles on this 1953 recording of Losing Hand.
I thought I'd be your king, baby. Yes, and you could be my queen. I thought I'd be your king, baby. But you used me for your joker, 'cause I thought your deal was clean.
Was this rehearsed at all? Had you worked out with Ray Charles the interplay between his piano and your guitar?
No, those days, you go in the studio, you listen to the music, and you start recording. Of course, they had charts, and you look, but everything was done from the soul, from the heart, you know what I mean? The charts didn't mean anything. Whatever, what you hear coming out on a record, none of that was written on a chart, you know what I mean? But I was a specialist in that sort of stuff. I really analyzed all of those types of blues playing and whatnot, and that's how I became a studio musician, because I took it very seriously playing that music, you know? And they knew that if Mickey Baker was playing the guitar, he would find something to do that would fit in with the mood of the music. That's about the best I can say of it.
Would you choose one of the Atlantic recording sessions that you're featured on that you particularly like?
One song that was nice was Mama, He Treats Your Daughter Mean by Ruth Brown. It starts off with the guitar. And what I was playing on the guitar was the type of guitar that everybody wanted to hear at that time, you know. And I used that type of guitar playing on that I used on that song, Mama, Treat Your Daughter Mean, many guitar record sessions. Basically the same. It's the introduction. That's what makes it nice. Ja-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
What year it was, I don't know. Maybe 54, I think.
Actually, I just looked it up. It was recorded in 1952.
It was?
Yeah, and let's see, you're featured on guitar. Connie Kay from the Modern Jazz Quartet is featured on drums. He did a lot of session work for Rhythm and Blues Records, didn't he?
Connie was, in those days, Connie had a set of drums that were really comical, you know. Everybody was starting off in those days, you know. Nobody had anything, you know. And they were just happy to be musicians. And I think that's what made the music go so well. Nobody really knew what they were doing in those days, but they did it so well. You know, it was all done alive in a studio within 3 or 4 hours, four sides, you know what I mean? And today, to do 3 or 4 sides on an album, it takes these guys a month with all kinds of recording. But it was all done live. If you had singers, the singers were there, saxophones, everything was there at one time.
Why don't we hear Ruth Brown's 1952 recording of Mama, He Treats Her Daughter Mean with my guest Mickey Baker, featured on guitar.
It's
Brown recorded in 1952. My guest, Mickey Baker, featured on guitar. And he is being awarded a Pioneer Award from the Rhythm and Blues Foundation for the hundreds of recording sessions that he worked on in the 1950s and 60s. Now, this was a period when usually if there was an instrumental break on a rhythm and blues record, it was like a honking saxophone break. Did you have to kind of fight for room for the guitar because the saxophones were so prominently featured?
Oh, no. Well, the guitar was, in those days, the type of guitar that you're playing, you could always fill in behind the saxophone while he's doing his solo, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in the way, they chose who's going to play the solo. You know, they said, well, we're in a sax solo here, a guitar solo here, et cetera. It was all worked out. It was always worked out who was going to do what solo here, even if it's a half of a chorus, you know what I mean? It was all done, I used to say, lipperaneously, you know.
You say it?
Lipperaneously. you know, like a extemporaneous, lipperaneously. We'd just talk. Once we know the pattern of the song, we know how we're going to. Once you know that the guitar, what kind of rhythm the guitar is going to play in the background, what the piano is going to play in the background, and what the saxophone is supposed to be playing in there. Right? It's what it's like. The thing starts up, doom 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 doom. The guitar goes ching ling 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 ling, and the sax go wow. You know, it's like that. It's, and they all work themselves out together. You know, anyway, it was a natural for the musician to do. They didn't do that with any musician. They had very well chosen musician to do that. You know, you couldn't get that from any musician.
Did you usually like the records that you made? Did you usually like the groups that you were recording with? You know, the vocal groups.
It was always fun. You felt that you were doing something great. You know, making hit records. Well, you were young, and you think you can hear yourself playing on a record. You know, that nobody knew who you were on the record, but they'd like the guitar solo, and you say, "See, it makes you feel good that you're doing something like that." You know, we were very proud of what we were doing, no matter who we were recording with. You know,
well, you just made a good point there, which is that the session men were really pretty anonymous. I mean, now maybe on a reissue it'll say who the musicians were on a date, but when the records came out in their own time, it would give the name of the group or the lead singer. But that was it. You wouldn't be mentioned as the guitarist. Did you feel bad about that?
No, you have to realize that you're working as a studio. I was working as a studio musician, and sometimes I would do 3 or 4 record sessions a day.
Mm-hmm.
And in a week's time, there was no week that went by that I didn't do at least 15 or 20 record sessions. You know, and who cared? You made the money that you wanted. I was at that one point in those days in the '50s, because this is in the '50s we're talking about now. I was making like $400 or $500 a week very easily, you know. Can you imagine? In those days, $400 or $500 a week was like unheard of, you know.
Let me play the Shirelles hit, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow. And the first thing you hear on this record is your guitar. Do you have any memories of this session?
No, I think I did something very different on the guitar, though. Something that had never been done before, but I can't remember what it was. They asked me to do, because I was always be so proud. Mickey, you do this. What can you do with this? And I'd stick my chest out, you know, after I was 25 years old or something, you know. Stick my chest out, and I can do this, and I can do it. But you must remember something else. I wasn't actually this type of a guitarist from my roots. I was a jazz musician, so I could do a lot more things with a guitar than an ordinary blues musician can do. You get the idea? And so I'd come up with ideas, and I think there was something with a lot of one of my ching-a-ling guitar things, you know what I mean?
Well, why don't we play the opening for you, and that'll refresh your memory. This is the Shirelles, Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow?
That's like I said, it's a ching-a-ling guitar. Ching-a-ling-a-ling, tink, tink. You're playing arpeggios on the guitar, you know. Ching-a-ling, tink, 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 ching-a-ling, tink, tink, you know, ching-a-ling.
Very, very twangy.
Oh, in those days, that's what they loved. That real, Well, like the, now they hear the guitars just piercing the guitar today, you know, just a real, in fact, the way they do it today, they've got boxes to do that, you know. They got a box to do the guitar this way, a box to do that. I think on that guitar that you were hearing there, there was a tremolo on the amplifier, just slightly tremolo effect on the amplifier to give that chick and give that waving sort of a sound,
mm-hmm.
you know, on that guitar. But nowadays, they have so many different types of boxes they can put on the... You didn't have all of those gimmicks. In fact, you didn't have anything in those days. It was all that's at the time when they were creating these ideas. You get the idea?
My guest is guitarist Mickey Baker. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest, guitarist Mickey Baker, is getting a Rhythm and Blues Foundation Award tonight for his work as a sideman on hundreds of recordings from the 50s and 60s. Now, I want to play something different from what we've been hearing, and this is a recording in which I'm not sure if you're the leader on this or not, but it's an instrumental recording, and so it's not a question of being, you know, a studio musician for a vocal group. The Bear Family label has reissued a lot of your instrumental tracks, and this is from 1955, and it's the title track of this reissue. It's called Rock with a Sock, and it features you on guitar, Jimmy Lewis bass, Dave Specs Bailey on drums, Ernest Hayes piano, Warren Lucky on tenor. Now, what do you remember about this?
Rock with a Sock was one of my songs that I recorded at Rainbow Records back in the days of Alan Freed, you know?
Uh-huh.
Because I wanted to name that song Who Freed Alan? And Alan Freed said, no, you're not going to put that name on that the record. So we changed the name to Rock with a Sock, you know?
Why don't we hear your 1955 recording of Rock with a Sock? This is a tune by my guest, Mickey Baker, who's featured on guitar. Guitarist Mickey Baker recorded in 1955 the title track from a reissue called Rock with a Sock, and Mickey Baker is getting a Pioneer Award from the Rhythm and Blues Foundation for his work on literally hundreds of recording sessions through the 50s and 60s. Now, you were not only a session guitarist, you had your own group for a while, Mickey and Sylvia, whose biggest hit was Love is Strange. How did you end up forming that group?
Well, that's... Like I was saying, it was Alan Freed was the popular man in those days. And I was doing Alan Freed shows as a guitarist in the band, you know. And we'd come out, we'd do our numbers and whatnot. And Sylvia was actually, at one time, a guitar student of mine. She was also a singer. She had been making records. She had made records as a singer called Little Sylvia, you know. And she came to me when I was on an Alan Freed show. I think it was the first Alan Freed show the rock and roll show, the very first rock and roll show that it was done ever. And Sylvia asked me if I could if I could help her get back in show business. It was simple as all that. And I says, yeah, because at the time there was Mary Ford and Les Paul, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And Mary Ford and Les Paul, like Les Paul had all of those tape recorders. The music was very nice, but they couldn't perform it on stage.
Because he did a lot of tape manipulation with his recordings.
Yeah, it was all re-recorded. What they do today, he was a master of that way back there then, you know what I mean? So I said, why don't we take the two guitars and we'll figure out a way to make Mickey and Sylvia and do it on stage. But I want you to know that this was all done as a joke. I never did think that Mickey and Sylvia would really become so big, you know. But I figured it would be a good idea to try it. It's something that's never been done. But at the time, I was a very busy musician. I was making a lot of money. And to start this Mickey and Sylvia thing going, I had to give up a lot of things to do it. Because I had to go out on little gigs, places, and with her trying to make her play the guitar, because she'd never played the guitar on stage. It took time to do that, you know.
So to you, the whole Mickey and Sylvia act was something of a nuisance?
No, it was a joke. I didn't know there was going to be... Well, no, it was like a Frankenstein monster. Let's put it like that. It all of a sudden wants to choke me to death. I packed up and left the country after that. I didn't want to be bothered with any of that stuff. That Mickey and Sylvia cut my... I made a lot of... No, don't get me wrong. I made a pile of money with that, you know. But I was no longer a musician. I was Mickey of Mickey and Silver. I didn't like that too much, you know.
Well, in spite of it, let's hear Love is Strange. It's a great record. Mickey Baker of Mickey and Sylvia. Was that the Sylvia who owned Sugar Hill Records?
Yeah, she became very popular. She was a fantastic, she had a fantastic imagination.
One of the mothers of rap music. I mean, her label Sugar Hill is like the first
she
big
made the first rap record label, that we ever made. Label. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she
so were you kind of proud to be kind of affiliated with that?
Well, you know, actually, we lost contact with one another, but actually that song, Love is Strange, you know, it was her inspiration that made me record that song in the first place. We had to work it out in a way, but I didn't want to be bothered with it one way or the other, you know. But finally, we had a big fight. I said, okay, we record that song. I went and wrote some new lyrics to it, and we sat down and we worked it out, and it put it out, and it became a smash hit right away. But she has a nose or an ear for what's popular, though. She made the very first rap records by just listening to the kids in the street. And she said that could be great on a record, you know. So, but they made a pile of money with that rap, those first rap records. In fact, if you got rap music today, it's because of Sylvia.
So you went to France to get away from the whole Mickey and Sylvia thing?
Oh, Mickey and Sylvia was not the only thing. I was fed up with lots of things, you know. First place, let's put it this way. When I was a little boy, I always wanted to go to France simply because I heard that Josephine Baker was in New York, in Paris, and she was raging a storm, you know. I said, one of these days, I'm going to go to Paris and I'm going to do the same thing. I was 11 and a half years old, and all of a sudden, one day, I did it. <You know?
laughs> Now, I have a question for you about your childhood. I know that you spent a good deal of your childhood in orphan homes and reform schools, yes?
No, not so much reform school. Well, it was off. Let us say that it was an orphan home to keep kids from going to the reform school later on.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because that's exactly where I would have wound up.
And you kept running away. did they keep bringing you back when you'd run away?
Yeah, they bring me back all the time. I ran away and went to New York one time, and they came up and brought me back, and I went to Chicago, and they brought me back, and I went to St. Louis. Well, you see, I went to St. Louis because I said that's where the blues was created. I had this imagination, this fantastic imagination, you know. I said, I wanted to go to St. Louis, for instance, because that's where the St. Louis blues was written. I got the St. Louis blues, all I could see was shoe factories. You know? No blues at all. And next time I said, I'm going to Chicago, all those gangsters, you know. And then the next time I said, I'm going to New York, I'm going to go to New York and I'm going to become a merchant seaman and take a boat to France, and then I'm going to become French.
So tell me, was having freights and hitchhiking as a kid alone
not
on the road?
Darling,
not
hitchhiking,
not hitchhiking? No.
I'd just get on freight trains and go.
Uh-huh.
You know, in those days, it was possible, you know. You could get you go to a hobo camp. They call them hobos, you know. You go to a hobo camp and the guy says, I want to go to Pittsburgh. He said, there's a certain train that will come out of the yard, because you couldn't go in the yard, but you could wait outside the yard to catch the trains. And the hobos would always be there. They didn't do too much about it. They used to beat them up and knock them off the trains, but they couldn't get rid of them. Hobos are not bums. You know, they weren't bums. They were just people that would like to go from one place to another, free, on freight trains, you know?
And let me ask you, since you've been on hundreds of recording sessions, do you ever hear a record getting played on the radio and think to yourself, Is that me? I can't remember if that's me or not.
Not really. I knew how ridiculous I was on the guitar. I can hear some people and I'd say, damn, it sounds like me, you know. But then he'll do something else in the course of what he's doing that I know that I didn't do. It could be much better than what I did, you know, but I know right away that it's not me, you know.
Well, Mickey Baker, I want to congratulate you on your Rhythm and Blues Foundation Award, and have a good visit to the United States before you return to your home in France.
Right.
Want to say a few words for us in French before you go?
C'était très bien passé, mais malheureusement, c'est fini. Au revoir.
Au revoir. Mickey Baker will receive a Pioneer Award tonight from the Rhythm and Blues Foundation at their 10th annual award ceremony. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.